Why do some products have such a natural pizzazz to them? It feels like sometimes everyone is talking about this one product off a shelf. Meanwhile, you have other products out there that are incredible. In fact, maybe you are a business owner, you've launched a product like that. Maybe you manage a team where you're in charge of a certain product like that. And no matter how incredible the product is, it just doesn't seem to catch on. We're going to be diving into this conversation today. Hello, everyone. My name is Blake Benz. I'm the host of the Good Advice Podcast, and we're bringing you good advice in the actionable, tangible things that actually work in business. Today, we're going to be talking about marketing and really how to make your marketing have that umph to it. I'm not talking about just generic marketing. Let's talk a little bit about buying behavior and what people care about and what people think about. Now, this is a pretty big topic for me, which is why I'm calling it a heavy hitter on the podcast. We have a guest on today's show. It's Justin Stevens. He's the founder of JWS Partnerships, and I'm so excited to pick his brain and chat a little bit about all things marketing. Stay tuned. Before we dive in, we do have a word from one of the amazing businesses that sponsor the podcast. Thank you so much for supporting the show, and we will be right back soon. When disaster strikes in your home, do you know who to count on? I'm talking about when water damage, fire damage, or mold becomes a problem in your house. You need someone that you can trust who's going to get your house back in working order. That's why I love recommending Best Option Restoration here in Northwest Arkansas. Best Option Restoration is the perfect choice for when you need that initial response for damage in your home. They're a national leader here in our Northwest Arkansas community, and they are restoration specialists that can give you the peace of mind you need when you're facing the unthinkable. Your home is somewhere special, which is why you need someone who sees the value in your home and wants to get you taken care of as quickly and efficiently as possible. Best Option Restoration is so committed to helping you with your home that they have an answer line that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where you could talk to an actual person about getting a specialist out to your home and resolving whatever damages you're seeing in your house. So if you experienced fire damage, water damage, or discovered mold in your home, call Best Option Restoration today to restore your house back to the home you love. Call 479-458-8840 or click the link in the episode description to contact Best Option Restoration today. All right, Justin, it's great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I always love having actual NWA people on the podcast, which isn't always the norm. We have people from all over come on the show. But I like having people from the area on, because whenever I meet someone online and I'm like, yeah, and Arkansas is great, you know, and they're kind of like, is it though? You know, so it's always nice. And I just had this exact same convo with someone else out of Oklahoma City. It's nice when someone's from here and they know the fun of our area.
It's so amazing. Now, you mentioned Oklahoma City, live there too. So tell me a little bit about that connection real quick.
That was a guy who was, he's the CMO of Simple Modern. And he,
Mike. No, that's CMO.
CEO. This was Chris Hoyer. And he was a director of sales at Walmart for 16 years.
Chatted with them a little bit. So yeah. Love their brand. Love that.
Yeah.
They're kind of homegrown.
Yeah. Too. We interviewed and I asked him what's going on with the Stanley Cup thing. You know, like this is wild.
God, talk about that blowing up.
I know. And I live under a rock, I guess, because I was hanging out with my wife and a few of her friends and she was gifted a Stanley Cup. Is Stanley the brand or is it the name of that style?
Stanley's the brand.
Oh, okay. So again, this is me being ignorant. Well, so she was gifted. I think it was that brand, but the two other ladies were like, hey, do you love it? Do you like it? And I was like, what is this? And then they were like, aghast, like, you don't know what, which it's so weird to me how these things, these trends pop up.
So two funny things about that. One is that my wife and I recently counted the number of Stanley cups, for lack of a better term, in our house, and I think we counted 9.
Okay, so
that we all acquired in the last, say, 2 years.
Yeah. So when I talk about not knowing, you're like, come on, man.
We know a little bit. We know a little bit. But what is fascinating about that also is my son kind of got in on the game a little bit. So he has an
Is he like a reseller or something? Or
no, just he wanted one.
Yeah. Okay.
He's 16. He, because he saw so many around the house.
Was this like a TikTok trend or like, how did this,
I believe it was social media. I'm not sure if it was TikTok or not, but you know, they've always, the funny part about my son getting one is he has the exact replica and looks the same as what I remember my grandfather having when we would go camping and hunting together.
Yeah.
So it's a large green, army green.
Yeah.
It's about that tall, right? Yeah. It'll keep things warm for, I don't know, 2 weeks or something, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's just, it's fascinating to look at that and go, oh, I first saw that when I was 5 in the early 80s. You fast forward 40 plus years, and then my son has one just like it.
It's funny how things come back into style like that.
So I had talked to the Stanley brand 3 or 4 years ago before they hit big. And we had a lot of discussions about how do we re-engage consumers? How do we get this brand to the forefront and then just leave it to social media? And the thing just explodes.
It is funny how, and I don't mean this in a negative way towards Stanley, but I'm going to be as vague as possible without offending anyone who listens to the podcast. I always have to give this disclaimer, but I'm going to totally simplify the story to not make it so long-winded, but it's just amazing to me how businesses blow up through like the perfect moment of timeliness and luck and going viral or what have you. I mean, it's a very, and I'm sure there's people out there who their whole like MO is like studying and figuring out like, how do you replicate that? And they probably charge a lot of money for that. But it's just very fascinating for me how some of these things take on a life of their own.
It's the old adage of right place, right time.
Yeah, right.
With the growth of Yeti. And then you see a lot of copycats on the market.
Yes. And that's a really interesting comment too, of how other businesses doing well, how that makes it ripe for you.
Right.
Because
Stanley, I don't know the history, I'm guessing here, so this could be completely false, but they were probably one of the originals of that type of tumbler and the vacuum seal and all those features.
Well, what Chris was saying, this was egg on my face because I didn't realize Stanley was its own brand. I thought that was like the name of the cup. So I was like, yes, you guys must be doing really well then, because his business sells drink apparel. And came to find out that he doesn't sell Stanley cups, but he did say it's been really good for us. Because like that market category or whatever you would describe it as is now doing really well because of the Stanley Cup.
I mean, there's another metaphor for you is the rising tide.
Yes. Yes.
Boats.
Yes.
Right. So Yeti, and they have their position as the more premium.
Yeah.
Right. You have the OG.
Yeah.
Again, I could be wrong, but I believe they are Stanley just being sold, right? Coming back into fashion, you have Simple Modern, you have a lot of others, you have Walmart getting into the game with Ozark Trail as well.
Yes.
Right.
I do like that metaphor or that expression because my friends know I never say it right. I'm like, the rising ships with all the tides.
I had to think about for half a second, get that right.
Well, so our listeners, I gave a little bit of an intro before we got into our conversation. Give the listeners just like the little bit of a scoop on who you are, what you do, what you're most passionate about. And then we'll get into more conversation.
It's always a loaded question too.
I know, right? And it's like, what's the most important thing to say right now? But anyway.
So, lifelong marketer.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew when I was a freshman in high school what I wanted to do. It's going to marketing.
You knew that as a freshman.
Right.
Like, what you just, did you, was there like a show you watched that like you were like,
no,
I love that?
The light bulb went off. And this was me being 14, right? Just looking around and looking at, it was interesting. I went to a private high school. We had uniforms, but they didn't have, this is going to be a long-winded story, but they didn't have any requirements on shoes.
Okay.
And so just kind of a random thought of like, oh, that's interesting. Why do these guys wear Nikes or Adidas? Yeah. What are they saying?
Yeah.
Oh, why do the girls wear these types of shoes? Right. And then I started expanding that. And just if you stop and look around, no matter where you're standing, whoever's listening to podcasts now, just stop and just look around. You see marketing all around you. Just use that as a very blanket term. Right. So not only the shoes you're wearing, the clothes you're wearing, how you part your hair, if you have a beard or not, what kind of coffee you're drinking, where you're at, what kind of car do you drive? It's all branding.
Mm-hmm.
right? And you're telling a story. And right. just like those little synopsis firing of like, oh, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what you tell them, how you tell them, how much of it is subconscious. You maybe not, you couldn't express maybe why you like Nike
mm-hmm.
as much as you do.
Mm-hmm.
But your next pair and your next pair and your next pair.
There's a lot of pride too.
We're going to be Nike.
Yeah.
It, this is where, like, if I didn't go into business and marketing, I may have gone into psychology. Because I, as a natural extension of that, people are making those decisions every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
From what do I eat? Where do I shop? All those decisions can be influenced very easily by this type of who am I? What do I want to be? What do I mm-hmm. want to project?
Right.
To others.
Have you been on that conversation? I've heard that, like, why are people in like high end, like jewelry stores so snooty is because they're playing on the person buying basically their ego. And it creates like this sort of like power tension that's designed to get the person to be kind of like, I'll show you, I can afford this and then get them to be a buyer or what have you.
It can absolutely transcend to all that, right? How you, and then it got me thinking more the psychology of the marketing, but like, why do people act differently mm-hmm. around different people?
Mm-hmm.
Or do they or don't they? And why, right? So like, just that, the why started just like circling around in my head, right? Why did that brand put that billboard there? Why does another brand not use billboards at all?
Yeah.
And just continue like going down those rabbit holes and learning about that was just fascinating.
Well, but I mean, also not to totally sidetrack us, but I've also learned in business, like there's businesses that are incredibly smart about that kind of stuff. And you can almost like draw the line or like see the little breadcrumbs of like how clever they're being. You're like, oh, okay. But then I've also realized there are some businesses that despite their best efforts are somehow still in business. Like their marketing, you're just like, what are you doing? I think a perfect example that's very timely, and this is a little bit past the time once this episode goes live, but you know, Wendy's is in hot water right now which now they're saying like, wait, we never said surge pricing.
I saw your post.
Yeah. You know, that. I just think it's interesting. And so for our listeners, unless you're like me and you didn't even know what Stanley was, Wendy's, basically I think it was their shareholder meeting or what have you, they said, hey, we're reinvesting like $20 billion, whatever, into dynamic billboards. And with that, we want to be able to have dynamic pricing or something to that effect. It's pretty basic PR mistake in that they never clarified what that meant. So people ran with that. And the implication of it was that they were going to be changing their prices based on demand. So if more people are in line, it's going to cost a little bit more, what have you. Internet came alive about this whole thing, hated it naturally. And without getting too in the weeds on the story, that whole, and that's really less marketing, I guess, but I've just realized over the years that some big brands are in business despite, like, think about Pepsi. When Pepsi did that, was it Kim Kardashian or one of the Kardashians? Do you know what commercial I'm talking about where it was like, I think this was back in like 2019 or 2020, maybe. I was going to say when racial tensions were at their highest, maybe it's not fair to
that's
be like
a whole other
podcast. Yeah. We really want to get into this, but so they did a commercial with like rioters or picketers or protesters and then the police, and they were like fighting. And then one of the Kardashian comes out with like a can of Pepsi and everyone's like smiling and laughing and sharing the Pepsi or whatever. Well, this was like universally panned. Mm. And it came out that Pepsi, it wasn't an outside marketer. Pepsi did it themselves because, like, we know our brand best, it's cheapest, what have you. And it was a whole massive failure. Point being, another example of a business that, you know, that doesn't quite understand this marketing conversation. Again, I'm getting long-winded. I'm getting all over the place here.
It's interesting to think about, because if you pause for a second, think about Wendy's, whatever their intent was, whatever their plan, right? I think they mentioned it was going to be a 2025 rollout. So
right.
It could have been just very broadly, we're thinking about this thing and they want to make some news. They want to get a headline. Comment.
Right, right.
And they may have not even gone down that road of what that looks like. But also, if you think about it, like, I wouldn't be surprised if we could sit here, if we really thought hard, and uncovered a multitude of companies and brands that already use dynamic pricing in some way.
Yeah.
Airlines.
Yeah.
Could be a perfect example, right? Mm-hmm. I was very late in booking my flight to Expo West in a couple of weeks. And having to do that comparison shopping between, I won't name, which, throw any of the airlines under the bus.
Totally unrelated or somewhat related, but airline prices right now also are just kind of wild.
It's really interesting. I had flights to LAX from here, range anywhere. I looked at four different providers from 300 to 1200 or higher,
mm-hmm.
right? So dynamic in the sense of like when they take off or when they land or, mm-hmm. you know, which seats you get. Mm-hmm. But you can also think about it in terms of like, who knows what type of dynamic pricing exists within the healthcare mm-hmm. industry.
Yeah.
That's a whole other thing to unpack, right? And I know Walmart has been testing over the years. I don't know if they call it dynamic pricing, but based on mm-hmm. markets, locations, mm-hmm. demographics. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that type as well. So mm-hmm. is it that much of a stretch, right? Mm-hmm. Wendy's the first one to ever think of this concept? No. But I think you brought up a good point of, I think it was in your post, because I saw a lot of them, just like you said, social media blowing up.
And this is a whole other topic, by the way, of when you think you're adding something meaningful to the conversation, and then you realize like, oh, there are 50 million people talking about this, but besides the point.
There's always something to be taken from every post. But it is interesting, I think you or someone else brought up, all right, I may be charged more for my spicy chicken sandwich and have to wait in line longer to get that.
Right.
That logic doesn't make sense. I'm sure they didn't think about that.
Right.
But if you were to flip that and say, hey, you know, if you wait more than 5 minutes to get your order, we're going to take the price down. I think the opposite would happen. I think everybody would be lining up there.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's another thing that kind of borders that psychology and marketing, understand your consumer and behavior, is that how much price, good economy, bad economy, doesn't really matter today. How much price can impact behavior,
mm-hmm.
right? It's absolute price. It's perceived value.
Mm-hmm.
All those things go into play. No one's sitting here with a little notebook and figuring out 299 plus three. And if I drive there,
yes.
they just see deal.
Right.
Or, you know, on sale. And those things trigger something in someone's brain to go, I need that.
Do you feel like marketing, I mean, you've been in the game for, you know, what, 20, 30 years? I mean,
25 years.
It's always risky to say that because you're like, I'm like, how old does this guy look? You've been in the game for 50 years, right? You're like, do you feel like the game's changed a lot, or is it the same game just with more bells and whistles?
It's a great question. I think my initial response would be,
or is it both?
It's yes and no.
The older I get, the more I realize how my temptation, I think, as people in general, is to make things black and white, and that things really are more nuanced than we make it. But
you know, it's amazing when you look at kind of what they call vintage advertising, or even Downtown Rogers with the big Coke still paying on the side of the, how old that actually is, but. There are a lot of examples of that dating back well over 100 years now. Whether it's Procter or Bayer, any of those kind of legacy older brands. So on some level, no, right? Because someone decided at some point that I need to put a name on this. Putting a name on there, whether it be Mrs. Myers or, you know, Jim's Tonic, was going to add value to that, was going to differentiate it, was going to, you know, help it stand out. And so in that case, you fast forward 200, 300 years, nothing changed. You still see brands popping up all the time and manufacturers, suppliers continually investing behind that brand, right? Because it's come to mean something.
Mm-hmm.
Now the bells and whistles piece, you fast forward today, technology, we can sit here and go, you know, spend 30 minutes on how technology and everything else has changed the dynamics, right? But at the end of the day, it is still product, consumer,
mm-hmm.
and how do you connect the two?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Whether I'm telling you over social media or I'm telling you with the flyer or I stick it on my car or a horse and buggy and drive around town, it's the same thing. I'm trying to connect that brand and its meaning and its value to someone who sees, who needs that type of product.
I love how you boil that down. I really resonate with that too, because it does even feel like in a way we overcomplicate not just marketing, but business in general. Mm-hmm. And it almost feels like we overcomplicate it to the point of we're unable to make like a healthy decision. Healthy is not the right word. Like, I guess a mildly intelligent decision. You know,
you use several different words: rational, logical, sound.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go on and on. But yes, there are lots of, and I've fallen victim to this as well. I'm not pointing any fingers, but fallen victim to like, oh, that's the trend, or there's that new shiny object we've got to go spend over there because that's where everyone's going, or that's what we need to do. When your consumer never left the spot,
yes,
they were at.
So that's an interesting insight. Like, how do you, because I'm sure you're in conversations constantly with businesses, how do you help a business not fall into the trap of shiny? Because I hear this all the time. And I even, for our listeners, I'm trying not to like talk out of both sides of my mouth here, but a good example of this would be like somebody who says, we need more video content. You got to do video content. It's resonating the best. And I would probably say like, yes, video is fantastic. But then on the flip side of that, like, so we're on a podcast. I have some businesses where like the business owner is really excited about podcasts and they're like, well, we got to have a podcast. And when you push back a little bit, maybe push back isn't the right word, but when you ask questions about it, well, why? Like, why do you need a podcast? Sometimes the answers I get is, well, because we have to. We got to do it. But there's not really any like actual connection with how that informs connecting with their customer, right? It's just like, well, everyone does a podcast, so you got to have a podcast, right? So like whenever you're talking to a business owner who is chasing essentially shiny object syndrome, are there some customers that you're just like, all right, and if you want to do that, go for it. But if customers are willing to lean in, how do you help them understand like the big picture rather than, you know, I think of the dog from Up who sees the squirrel, you know, keeping them from like running off and chasing after something.
That's a great question. And I believe it's, and as much as I want to believe that every brand, every supplier, every business has done this, many have not really sat down and done the hard work of like who we are as a brand.
I like that.
And what do we stand for, and how, who is our, not only that, but then who is our consumer, right? Yeah. If my consumer, if we were being true to either the data or other experiences with the brain, and our consumer is, not to make generalities, almost hate to say this, but an older or a senior citizen person or woman or do this, like, but social media is just a buzz, right? Everyone's spending over there, or it's video, it's YouTube content, and they're not on it. There's an obvious disconnect. I'm using very clear differences there, but it's really about understanding who you are, understanding the consumer, understanding the value you provide. And it's less about, it's always less about the vehicle you choose. My belief is that the message, if done right, if done authentically, if done clear enough, will get to your end consumer, right? There's a term that just continues to grow, is like omnichannel, right?
Yes.
It's on every single post on LinkedIn, and every agency is adopting it.
Sometimes, by the way, I hear these terms and I feel like I'm late to the party, in the sense of like, I start seeing them everywhere and I'm like, did I miss the trend here? Like, omnichannel is a great example of this, in that it felt like I woke up one day and everyone was using this terminology. And I mean, naturally, it's a big piece of Walmart's strategy. They've talked about it very openly in their shareholders meetings, but it's interesting how some of these like concepts, like another example of this that I was thinking of the other day was growth hacking. You don't, at least I never really hear that term anymore, but 5 years ago it was like, let's talk growth hacking strategies. How can we growth hack your business?
That's interesting, because I must have been under a different rock.
Okay, you haven't heard that? Or
I've never heard that. I may have it never stuck.
I mean, and it could be just the circles I was in, but there was a phase where like everyone I talked about, and I'd even get in conversations with people who they'd be like, hey, so like, what's your go-to growth hacking strategy? And I'd be like, I don't even know. I don't know what that means.
Right.
And so it's interesting how things sort of like take on a life of its own, you know? But I like what you're saying too. It's almost like going into business being platform or vehicle agnostic, which I think is hard. I think sometimes our biases are so strong. It's like, oh, well, I mean, TikTok's huge. I got to be on TikTok.
Right.
Right. But like, the roofer who 98% of his business comes from networking in person, his impetus to get on TikTok is easily much lower than, I don't know, the social media company, the digital marketing company. Right. I mean,
and that's interesting. I'm going to talk out both sides of my mouth this time, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because that new shiny tool,
yeah,
can be that
differentiator, right? Yeah.
Or if everyone else, if all your competitors are there and you're not, how does that impact your brand? Right. So it's more of a balance. It's more stepping back and asking the why, right? Does this align? And what I was getting to is, does it align to your overall brand and go to market strategy? Right. So I was trying to think of a good example, like off the top of my head, but like, hey, we know we're this and the value we bring is this, and this is how we're going to engage with our audience. All right. So this tool, this tactic, this platform does that help us get to that consumer faster? Does it help us tell that message better or more efficiently? Right. Does it open up more doors to drive trial? Or to encourage commerce in some way, then yes, explore. I'm not saying don't explore any of those tools by any means.
But I've learned also more and more that you have to get really comfortable with the idea of risk, in the sense of I'm okay with trying this and seeing where it goes. Because I think in many cases, you try something and you didn't expect it to go anywhere, and it takes on a life of its own. You're like a good example of that would be the podcast, in that I started the podcast because I had no customers and I was like, what do I do with my time? And my friend, Randy Wilburn, who does the I'm Northwest Arkansas podcast, big podcaster, he was like, yeah, maybe you should start a podcast. And I was like, okay, that's as easy as it was. I was like, okay, sure. And never had any idea it would take on the life that it did. And then I think on the flip side, a lot of times as business owners, we're our own worst enemy, in that we're like, oh, we have to do this. It's going to be so good. And then you don't get the feedback you wanted. It doesn't work. And instead of being comfortable with, I guess, that sunk cost and being like, okay, it didn't work, we're either going to iterate it or we're going to try a different medium. A lot of business owners are so emotionally connected to it that it's like, I got to just put more money into it, which I feel like these are all stories about me.
No, it's fascinating. You hit on so many things. I'll probably forget one I wanted to respond to. Risk-taking is key to success. I probably just repeated what's on a bumper sticker somewhere. But another podcaster I listen to, Scott Galloway.
Okay.
And, you know, one of his big mantras is that we do not, for worse, we do not reward failure in the U.S.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah.
And so you create fear, whether you feel it consciously, subconsciously, there's that, what will people think?
Yes.
Right. Mentality, or if I get it wrong, this is going to happen. Or I, you know, so it does. Fear is a massive, massive motivator, but for many times all the wrong reasons. I probably didn't say that right.
No, I'm with you. And I think you're really right about failure. I've been toying around with this, like, I don't know if for our listeners, you can just steal this idea because ideas are worthless basically, but I've always loved this idea of like a podcast that I'd call it Ugly Businesses, and it would basically be businesses that failed and what the founder learned from it. Cause I think you're right. Like, the stories we tell are, it's very much survivorship bias. And it kind of gets on my nerves too, when people tell the overnight success story of like the journey they've been on for like 20 years or whatever. Or actually, I think about, there's a guy I mentioned who, he has a really amazing digital marketing business. I say amazing in terms of revenue number. I don't actually really like his business. Just being very candid. Which is because we're misaligned in terms of values. But point being, he runs an 8-figure business today. The story he tells is very much like, yeah, I just woke up one day and this is like what came to me and here's what I'm doing, yada, yada. Well, he's been in Facebook marketing for over a decade. And I'm like, man, if you would include that part of the story, which maybe in this person's mind feels like that was 10 years of failure. So I like telling this part. And it, his story is not like anyone else's. We often, you know, I talk about the big $10,000 contract. I don't always talk about, you know, yeah, I picked up that customer for $500 and I needed the cash and it was a train wreck, you know, because I guess in a way we feel like that disqualifies us instead of realizing right. that, you know, that there's a lot to be learned in failure and there's a lot that connects us with other people
yeah.
through failure.
And we unfortunately keep that to ourselves.
Right.
Right. We don't want to share that because that's embarrassing or whatever.
Right.
Reason, right. But that's really, it's not only how you learn if used correctly, it's also how you can help other people, you know, and educate them and maybe help them avoid that mistake. They're still going to make mistakes. Everyone does. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that it's funny that got lost somewhere along the way of, you know, I think we were taught early on, I was like, hey, that's fine. You know, we don't even like schools don't even grade stuff until whatever X grade. Right. And my belief, even though my wife's a teacher, I think she agrees with me for the most part, is like fourth, fifth, sixth grade. There's really no reason to be concerned if you have an 83 or an 87, right? That's not the purpose of education at that point. You're going to get me on a soapbox here about this, but
you got to be careful. I'm a former teacher too.
But, so, well, let me ask you then, like,
okay,
you start to build up that fear in that student of, yeah. failure. What happens if I get an 89 versus 90
right.
and I get in trouble?
Right.
Right. There are consequences.
What I'll say is I taught high school. One of my biggest takeaways was just how malleable kids are and how much their identity has been shaped by those achievements or failures. In that I'd have a kid who'd come in who was incredibly bright, very smart, but because she had never had, I'm thinking of a student in particular, because she never had a great science teacher. I don't want to say she never had a great one, but it just wasn't a good fit. So she comes in and she's like, I'm really bad at science. And it's like, well, is that true? Or is that like the persona you've shaped because of some failure you, and this was ninth grade, some failure you had in eighth grade or seventh grade or what have you.
Right.
So I'm tracking with you for sure.
Yeah. And that, there's so much I could say about the education system. Somewhere we took our eye off the ball. And this could probably be its own podcast, right? But we're not arming kids today with the tools they need to flourish.
No,
and
yeah,
to be successful.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, right? Our education system's mostly rote memorization.
Right.
You know?
And to your point, it's interesting, right? You think my wife's a science teacher as well. And most of the kids in those grades, their favorite subject is science. Why? Because it's hands-on.
Right.
It's interactive. It's,
right.
You don't get that, unfortunately, with history or English right. class or anything else like that, right? But what if you could?
Right.
Can you make history?
Yeah.
Hands-on. Could you, you know, and so the kids are excited to go to her class and they learn just through osmosis, right? Mm-hmm. It's, yes, she has tests and she has quizzes, but what they're going to take away from that, I believe, are those experiences.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Matt could tie that directly back to then brands, our conversation with brands and building experiences. Well, we'll get there in a second. Where did we leave off? We went.
I don't know. This is like a Michael Scott moment where you're just like, you're with it and you're like, yeah. And you're yeah. like, wait, where am I going with it? You know, and I even find myself in
achievement and failure.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yes.
And
I'm glad you were with us because I was like, man, I don't know where I'm going.
What happens? Oh, risk taking. That's why I wanted to stay. Yeah. What happens in is,
yeah.
and this is generalities, but you come across people who are in specific roles. within a company, or I'll just, you know, say the supplier world here locally, who there's no incentive to take that big risk. There's no incentive system in place to swing for the fences, right? And so people play it safe. They're like, oh, well, we've done XYZ before. Let's do that again. Oh, well, you know, and I'll pick on Walmart a little bit. The buyer just said, we want to do this, so let's do that. Right? No one got fired for doing what the buyer asked. It may or may not be in the brand's best interest and Walmart's best interest. Right? But it was that new shiny thing. Over here, I'm speaking generality, so I don't want anybody mad if they're listening to this, but that tends to happen. Right? You'll come across supplier marketing teams who are like, yeah, this is our playbook. We've done this for the last 2 or 3 years. We're just going to stick with this.
Yeah. It's the, we know what works.
Right.
Which, and like you said, it could be, that could be exactly what needs to happen, but it also may not be. And you also, I think when you're averse to risk, and I think you're right, talking about the schooling system. I mean, we actively punish risk taking in schools in that, you know, if you tried something that didn't pan out, I mean, so, I'd say to an extent, I always had students who they'd get kind of creative and I'd say like, okay, I see what you were doing there. Mm-hmm. Like I'm with you. But more often than not, it's because it is mostly rote memorization. It's exactly how I asked you to do it. And if you get outside of these lines, you're actively punished, your grade goes down, what have you.
Right.
And the same thing I think is true. I think you're right in terms of our business systems that are out there. Funny enough, we're actually about out of time. I told you before we recorded that this is going to go by really fast, but it almost feels like we need to have a round two conversation. It's what the series is called, where someone comes on again and we have another conversation. So if you mildly enjoyed this, we can make that happen.
It's my very, like I shared with you before we started, it's my very first podcast.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I was teasing with someone that like, yeah, I think I have, you know, like people say they have the looks for radio.
Yeah.
Like I've always just felt like I've had the voice for like telegraph.
You do have a good voice actually.
But do I? Because that's what.
No, actually, as you were talking and telling a story, I had this random like he's got a good podcast voice.
Because it was the one other time, this is another tangent, but was working for a wireless company years ago, right? And was retail marketing manager. And so we sponsored a couple of NASCAR racers at the time and would do kind of these little retailtainment tours and shows at our stores. And we did one, it was grand opening, had the NASCAR car out there at a radio station. And then out of nowhere, the DJ comes up, puts a mic in front of my face and tell me about what's going on today, right? And like this big radio voice, right?
Yeah.
And I heard that come through the radio like, oh my God, really? Do I sound like that? So I probably subconsciously maybe avoided some of these, not taking the risk, just as we talked about.
Yeah.
Because like, do I come across, right? And I listened to so many other podcasts and I'm like, well, I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I can't just get on talk. Well, clearly I can at least.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit in terms of like the learning process. Like it's not unlike when you do like your first video on LinkedIn and it's awkward and you're just weird, you know, whatever. And like, I have a whole folder on my computer with gigabytes upon gigabytes of video content. And, I was cleaning up one of my drives and I saw some of that old content. I opened it up and I mean, I cringed. I was like, I actually put this on the internet. Like the camera was like looking up at my chin. Like the fan was like spinning above me. The background's like super messy because my wife and I used to share an office and not to throw under the bus, but it was pretty much organized chaos on her side of things. And, but you know, I think sometimes, especially with like podcasting, cause I talked to a lot of people who are starting podcasts and a lot of people are really hard on themselves for not being that person right away. And I think it goes back to our conversation on risk taking and that, you know, you have to really see the value in failure and missing the mark so that you can learn to do it better.
Right. And that's the only way if people would remember when they're younger, that's the only way you learned.
Right.
Try something you felt. Oh, I need to change this. I need to change that. And so that's one we definitely need to have follow up because I would love to kind of share some personal, what's the word I'm looking for?
Anecdotes
or just learnings that I picked up over the last 2 or 3 years and some life changes that really caused me to sit back and reflect.
Yeah.
Right. On things and that, you know, we're all here to do something special on Earth, I believe, and amazing. And what holds us back more times than not is that fear.
Right.
Right. Because they, people tend to, and I've done it myself, tend to paint this picture of the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is right. that I put out one bad podcast and then,
yeah.
then it doesn't generate any money. We're going to have to sell our house and live on the streets in this cardboard box. My family's going to, you know,
yeah.
from one, not yeah. if you watch Ted Lasso, but
yeah.
Uh-huh. What's the character's name that went to coach for the other team?
Nate. Yeah.
If you remember some of those anecdotes of like, why don't you ask that girl out? Well, because this will happen, right? So it's exactly that. But in reality, the results are more likely going to be flat,
mm-hmm.
no change, or I learned it was kind of good and kind of bad, to really good, to amazing.
Right.
Right? I think any smart, thought through, calculated risk, not crazy stuff, but will have so many more positive outcomes than the negative. Yeah, I screwed up on these two things, could have made that better, but overall, I'm incrementally better.
Well,
I learned something. I opened the store. I did something.
To not get long-winded here, I think it's also interesting, like sometimes what we measure success by is does not paint the whole picture. So like, I'm going to put out this podcast or this post or what have you. And the ROI for me is like a customer. You go to like a networking event and like the ROI is I gained a customer and it could have been the most valuable. Like you showed up the exact way you needed to. You made the connections you needed to. It just didn't give you a sale.
Right.
And how a lot of times it's like we throw the baby
out with the bathwater.
I'm telling you, man, these expressions are hard. I'm like, I throw something. The baby gets thrown somewhere. I was like trying to process it. But it's like, oh, it was a waste of time. And it's like, just because it wasn't a sale, which you were hyper-focused on that being the ROI, doesn't mean it was a waste of time.
You had the wrong preconceived outcome.
Right. Yes.
What that is, right? You may have walked into that event, had a conversation with someone who just needed to talk to someone.
Yeah.
The day. Business, non-business, whatever.
Yeah.
You may have just thought it was another conversation. That may have turned that person's day, week, month around.
Yeah.
How do you measure that?
Well, and I even think from like a sales perspective, I have found more and more the better customers I have, I do a better job of managing their preconceived notions. So like podcast advertising, people pay for podcast, they pay for an advertisement on the podcast. And I get these inquiries all the time. And I always tell people, okay, why do you want to advertise on the podcast? Which you would think would be obvious, I guess. But what I found is the people who say, well, I want to advertise and I want it to lead to this much in sales revenue. I have to do some, let's get on the same page basically of, hey, I know how podcast listeners operate. A lot of them are driving. Most of them are not going to pull over and go to your website.
Right.
It typically what happens is it's just like a networking event where someone hears about your brand and after the fifth, sixth, seventh time, they're like, okay, yeah, I want to check that out.
And you actually just hit that nail on the head of what I was going to say is that people, new business owners, I'll give them a hard time for a little bit, think, well, if I just do X, it'll turn into Y. Right, I'm going to put an ad in this, and that people should be beating me down my door. No, it goes back to that omni-channel word we used earlier. Yes, you have to be able to meet consumers where they are.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the I think at the core, one of the concepts around omni-channels, buy online, pick up store. Hell, you could be in store and have something shipped to your house. It just any way you want to. But thinking about all those intersection points with customers. And same with the new business starting here locally is like, where are those places and those times I can intersect with a consumer, right? It may just be, I'm going to do a podcast and I'm not going to expect anything of it because that's just going to plant the seed for them. Right. And they see the brand the third, fourth, fifth time, and maybe they see a banner or they walk in somewhere and we're on a menu or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. All those things are building blocks to that sale, right? So going into a networking event, I had a boss once who would put expectations on, oh, there's a networking event and we just paid $150 to go to it. We need to get 3 deals out of it. And they, great. Are you also willing to wait 6 months?
Exactly.
Because it may take that long.
Right.
And 4 other lunch meetings and a presentation and, you know, so managing expectations.
Right.
I think that goes across business and
yeah.
life and we all, I don't think anyone's perfect at, at doing that. Understanding the customer and then really being able to deliver an authentic message to build that relationship and engage and, you know, hopefully a long, fruitful relationship. So,
well, Justin, I tried to wrap us up 10 minutes ago and then you and I, we couldn't help each other. We couldn't help ourselves.
You can edit it down, right?
No. Yeah. For people listening who they want to connect with you, is LinkedIn the best way? I mean,
LinkedIn's absolutely best way.
Okay, cool.
So just very briefly, and we'll get into this in our follow-up conversation. So I started a company in October called JWS Partnerships, and my entire goal is to help supplier teams specifically, but it could be for other businesses here locally, be able to connect with their shoppers faster, better, and more efficiently. And, you know, so like I have a portfolio of services, of platforms, tools.
And we have a lot of listeners from the supplier community too. So
that could absolutely benefit the brands. If any brand is struggling to find the right tool to engage with that consumer, that consumer at the right point of at intersection, understand who their consumer is and where they shop and how they shop and what are they looking for. Think across the entire consumer journey. I have tools that can help brands enable that relationship building. And they just have to reach out to me via LinkedIn and we'll have a conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Justin, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. I appreciate
it. No, I appreciate it.
Hey, for our listeners, I'm going to put the link to Justin's LinkedIn profile, the link to his LinkedIn. It's going to be down in the episode description below. So if you're working on a supplier team, you definitely want to connect with Justin. Or if you honestly, not to put words in your mouth, Justin, but if you want to talk marketing and you are trying to connect with your buyer, it probably would be a good idea to connect with Justin as well. Having said that, if you listen to today's episode and you love the podcast and you're a first time listener, what the heck are you waiting on? Click that subscribe or follow button so you can keep getting good advice wherever you are. Don't forget, you can support the podcast on our Patreon, patreon.com/goodadvice. Or if you want to advertise your amazing business on the podcast, you can always reach out, blake@goodadvicecoaching.com. Hey, I appreciate you supporting the podcast long term. That's today's good advice. We'll catch you later. See ya.